This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, it's Saturday. Did you know that?
I did. It's the greatest day of the week. People get up, they sleep in, they go around, they kind of do their thing. Really, Saturday is the day that most people consider my day.
It is. It is always my day. I always say, okay, I've got to do a little shopping. Have to go to the beauty shop on Saturday. If everybody's looking for Faye Bagby on Saturday, they first look at the beauty shop. They say, you know, I've been doing it so many years on Saturday at a specific time.
Uh-huh.
And so if they can't find me, that's where they're going to look. I mean, then, you know, after that, they probably can't find me on Saturday.
You're hiding out someplace.
I'm hiding out at some wonderful store, you know.
Oh, wonderful.
And, oh, yes, I need to go check that today, you know. I mean, so, and then I may say, well, I want to try a new restaurant,
yeah.
Something I haven't had or, you know, all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a day that you just have to get out and have a glorious day, get out in the sunshine, you know, not in the heat of the day.
No.
But, you know, mornings. And go to a restaurant for breakfast, you know, and have everything that you can think of.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And I love that. I love the omelets. I love a stack of pancakes, but now I don't do those, but I love them.
And waffles.
I like to watch other people.
Yeah, watch other people eat their pancakes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a stack of pancakes, I would weigh 500 pounds.
Oh, but they would be so delicious.
They are, and I like to watch them, and you know, I see all that, and I like to try all the different things, you know, the good restaurants have. And there's one restaurant that I go to that you have to line up to get in.
Are you serious?
Yes. I mean, it is so busy. People are waiting outside. They're waiting inside. And it's an old West concept.
Ooh.
You know? Yeah. This is why everybody loves it and goes there. It has every kind of thing in the world. And people just, you know, Saturdays is the time to experiment and go there if you don't mind the wait.
Wow. And, well, it must be good.
It is. And, you know, I think they're only open till 4 o'clock during the day. But it's a wonderful experience. And I discovered it accidentally. And so I do go there. And I just love little out-of-the-way places. And this is one that's out-of-the-way because it's in a small town. But it's great.
Can you go in the back door, or do they make you wait in line?
No, you have to wait in line. You can't go in the back door.
Don't they know you're Faye Bagby?
There you go. The famous Faye Bagby ought to get in first.
Yeah.
I know that, but it doesn't work that way.
Or buy it as an investment property, and then you can go in and be first all the time.
I hadn't thought of that. Now, that's an idea that might have come. Its time might have come. I love the idea.
There you go.
Yeah. I just wouldn't want to take care of the help. Now, that's the only thing that would bother me.
Oh, yeah. That's not fun. But you go in first, and you don't wait in line. So, you know, there's ups and downs with everything.
That's right. And some of the best ideas happen on Saturday morning.
See, there you go.
That's right. Oh, I love Saturday. Well, maybe we should give out the phone number just for the fun of it.
Let's do that.
Okay. 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
This is
now,
all
Ivy
about...
Ivy Cottage.
Oh,
you know,
that's your favorite place.
It's my favorite place. And usually on Saturdays, the women just bust in there, you know. It's one of those things. And we don't think we're always going to need something else. But, you know, As women, we always need one more deal. I mean, you know, you can't ever say, well, now we've done enough. We need to stop this.
No, that doesn't happen. You have to have a yard sale every once in a while to get rid of the old stuff to make room for the new stuff.
You know, that's true. And I never did go to yard sales. I know a lot of people do, and they have a lot of fun. I have a friend that for years, he put him in a little antique place, and he'll go to yard sales, see if he can find old things, you know, that he might sell. And he's a person you would never think would do that. He was with International Harvester out of Chicago for years and was based in Texas. And this is not the kind of man you would think would enjoy doing antiques, but he does.
Really?
Yeah, so people, we never know. It'd be like years ago, Gary Moore, What's My Line?
Oh,
remember that old show?
I do.
And trying to figure out what these people did for a living and who they were, you know. And it's the same kind of deal. You would never suspect what some people do for a living.
Yeah, that is true.
It's not obvious from looking at them or talking to them.
Either. No. Unless somebody has like a uniform and a name tag or something, you really can't tell. People could be doing anything.
That's right. And it's hard to tell now. Some people, you know immediately what they do. But most people, it's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about making money.
Let's do that. So people don't
spending money.
Yeah. So they don't have to go to work anymore, and they don't have to, answer to somebody else or have that responsibility or that stress. And that's really what retirement is all about. It's all about living stress-free, because if people are retiring, and they're stressed out about money and not having enough, and my gosh, you know, how much longer can we make it before we run out? That's not the way to retire. You have to go ahead. You have to be active before you retire. You have to plan things out, and you have to do the right things in order to get there.
Yes, and people who do not plan, they're going to find that it's a chilly day when they have to start trying to figure out, can we make it on what little we have? So that's why everybody should start at 40 years old, you know, getting their house in order, you know, saying, okay, we need a plan. We're 50 years old, we need a plan, 60, 65. It's too late, when you're 75 years old and you've already retired, it's too late. You can't possibly go back and remake the money that you're going to need. But if you're 40, 50, 60, you know, you've got the time. You've got a 401k or you've got an IRA, and you need to do it wisely. You know, make the money work for you. And if the money isn't working for you, and you're so scared of every investment, and you've got the money in a CD, you're never going to make it. You can just write it off. CDs don't pay enough. The interest won't buy you more than a couple of cups of coffee and maybe, breakfast at Denny's. I mean, that's about where you're at, you know. And, everybody I know, when they come to us, they say, I've got a quarter of a million, I've got 500,000, I've got a million. Well, you know, and then you can start making it work. You can say, okay, I want 10 policies. I want 5 policies. I know I need to be diversified. You can't put your money all in one policy. Now, you know, we've been looking for policies for 2 months. It's been a struggle. You know, some of the ones we bid them, we just didn't get them. Then we had two that, as you know, they canceled because the person died within days, you know, of us doing the policies. So that was a low blow. But we did buy some policies. We're closing some more this week. We closed on $1.7 million. We've already got that filled up. We've got another $1 million that we can close this next week that we will be filling up. And then I think there's another $1 million. So people can get back in. We can get their money invested and make them more money. Because, as you know, we've had a lot of policies mature this spring. We've had so many mature that it's been hard to keep up with the maturities, you know. Because all these policies, we've had several $1 million of policies that have matured, and we're putting those people now back in policies.
So I'm just going to throw out a random scenario here. You had mentioned some ages of people getting started a few minutes ago. What do you say to somebody who has, say, $300,000 and they're 59 years old? Is it too late?
No. With $300,000, you can get started, I think, very well. And especially if you don't need to take money out for 2 to 3 years, because you might need that. And like you say, if they're that age and they're still working, they don't need the money right now. It might even be 5 or 6 years before they need it. So it will give you time, to roll this money over several times. And that's what they need to do. They need to get the interest income built up in their portfolio. And it's different than the stock market. It's different than anything I've ever known. It's a life insurance policy that someone who's really sick and terminal needs to sell. They either need to sell it to do the medical treatment, or they need to settle the estate. Now, we have people that, we buy policies $250,000, $150,000. We buy policies that are $1 million to $10 million. So it depends on what their circumstance is. And a lot of people, they've just flat run out of money for their medical treatment. Used to, I was always saying, well, it's $10,000 a month. Well, I'm wrong. It's now like $100,000, if they're going to do anything substantial to you. And a lot of people, they just flat run out of money to do it. Not everybody has group insurance.
And so selling their policy is really the fastest way to get a big chunk of change in a hurry.
It's a way to get your money fast. We pay them a lump sum. In other words, whatever we agree to pay them for their policy, it's a lump sum. They get it right then, and the heirs change. Instead of them having the heirs they had, it'll be our clients will be the heirs to the policy. They're the ones that's going to make the money. And it's a good way. It helps our clients, and it helps the people that need to sell their policies. It works both ways very well.
So it's a win-win for everybody.
It's a win-win for everybody. It's not morbid. When I started doing this in 08, people thought it was morbid. And they'd say, I don't know if I want to do that. But now they all know it's a business decision that the person that owns that policy has got to make. In other words, they're coming to us on bended knee saying, will you buy my policy?
Yeah. Yeah, and if there's nobody on the other end to buy it, excuse me, then it doesn't do any good. I mean, they have to have somebody to buy it. They desperate, because when you're facing a diagnosis of cancer, especially stage 4, and it's very, very serious right off the bat, you're like, oh my gosh, one, can we beat it? And then two, the second thing that it seems like most people's mind goes to is, oh my gosh, how am I going to afford this?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think the big problem that people don't realize is these people are off work. Now, you take somebody at 40 or 50, when we buy their policy, they need to be working. And it's hard to work when you're in the hospital, a month or 3 weeks at a time. That's time that, you can't go to work.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people, they can't keep their job because of this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard on the family any way you look at it. So here we come to the rescue and buy their policies. And as we've always bought these policies through a licensed provider, because we were not a licensed provider. So we always had to go to a licensed provider. And we have just now been licensed as a provider in Texas.
Oh.
Yeah. So now, when people in Texas want to sell their policies, we can go direct to them and help them, and we have cut out the middleman. So that's going to be a big deal here in Texas.
That helps to streamline things. The less cooks you have in the kitchen, the better the final dish is.
That's right. And so they don't have to go to someone in Georgia or Pennsylvania or on the internet. They will be able to come to us and sell their policy about a month from now.
And so the way this translates into retirement and growing people's wealth is that you get into a policy. I would assume most people who start out get into maybe one policy to start with and see how it works. Is that right? Is that accurate?
No, you're wrong. They're going to come and they're going to go in probably 2 to 3 to start with.
Oh, wow. Right off the bat.
Well, yes, because they need to be diversified. In other words, if that one policy went over, then, you know, they'd have to wait longer for their money.
Oh.
But if they've got 3 or 4 policies, you know, they're not all going to go over. So you'll have some that are going to come in early, some will come in on time, and there's going to be some that are going to go over. We just had 2 that matured that we talked about last week that had went 1 year over. So now then, they've got that maturity under their belt, and they don't have to pay premiums anymore, but they had to for 1 year.
And so they still made a profit on that investment.
Sure,
and it was a substantial profit, too. When we talk about going over and premiums, what this means is that, okay, the life expectancy is, say, 24 months. And then say it goes 6 months over and it goes 30 months. Well, all that does is you may have to pay a little bit of premium. It's a very small percentage of that policy that you're paying on, because in most cases there's other people in it. Not all, but you pay that little premium. You're still looking at a very small percentage of the profit margin. So it's not like that premium is going to eat away everything and you have nothing left and the whole thing's been wasted. It's not that at all.
No. Now, there may be some at the end that might not make hardly anything. If it's some of those old policies that we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
But all the ones we've done in the last 3 or 4 years, yes, you're right. You know, it's going to cost them a little bit, but they're still going to have a good profit.
Yeah.
You know, it won't eat up all of their profit. But when people come to us, the nice things about what we do is we never touch their money. None of the checks are ever made to me, never made to my corporations. It goes straight to the bank. And we tell them when they say, how does this work? I say, we're going to do a rollover. We're going to roll over from your 401k. Your money will be rolled all the way to Nevada Trust. We will set up the account at Nevada Trust. Nevada Trust acts for you and me. They are the trustees on this. And it's always good to have a bank as your trustee. And that way, when the policy matures, the bank gets a certified death certificate, and then they put the money in your account when the bank gives it to them. The bank, the life insurance company, sends them a check, and they put it in everybody's account because they know what each person has coming. You know, they know how much, because we give them a sheet that tells them everything they need to know when we close on the deal. And it says, okay, Joe Blow is going to have $25,000 coming. Susie over here is going to have $15,000 coming. Tells them everything. They have a spreadsheet, and they have a copy of every policy so they know how much to pay everybody. So that's what makes it a safer investment than just if they were dealing with somebody that's putting it in their account.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is, you know, a lot of people, you know, who invest in like a traditional investment, like Wall Street or something like that, they know that technically whoever's handling their account, their broker, can really do anything they want to with that money. But with a life settlement type of investment, people know, okay, this amount is going into this policy, and that's all there is to it. There's no wavering. There's no, well, you know, this looks good. Maybe let's jump over here. Let's move some things around. Let's shuffle. You know, you're not playing that smoke and mirrors game. It goes into one policy, and then that's where it stays. There's none of that, you know, wonky stuff that goes on with other investments.
That's exactly right. And when you have a brokerage account, the broker calls the shots. You don't. He does your investing. I have known people who would put the husband and the wife in the same investments. So if one of them loses money, they both lose money.
Dangerous.
You know, it is, and it's not really the way to do it. And, of course, everybody's been worried lately because the stock market's been so volatile. You know, it's gone way up, and then it comes way down. You know, if something goes wrong, that like 2008, they could have a damage to their portfolio, and it takes years, like we saw in 2008. It took 5 to 7 years for everybody to get their money back up.
Yeah.
And if you can afford to do that, it's fine, you know. But most of my clients can't because they are older. They need to substantiate their money. They need it where it's not going to go down. Now, I think that's the best thing about our deal is investment cannot go down. It's not like a stock. It can't lose money. You know, it's not going to crater, and if it's worth $100,000, it can't go down to $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I think people like that, and I'm always careful to use this word, but they like the idea of the security, I guess, of this type of investment. Now, obviously, there's risk with everything, and there's three major risks that are involved in a life settlement type of investment.
That's exactly right, and the biggest risk is it can go over. And if you cannot afford to pay premiums, you can't afford to do this at all. So if you can't pay $1,000 or $500 or even $2,000, if it went over, this is not the right thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
It may not go over, but you have to know that's a risk. It can go over. The other big risk is it is not liquid till it matures. So if you get in and all of a sudden you say, I've got to have $50,000 out, you cannot do it because you've spent the money on the life insurance policy, and everybody knows that. So, you know, that's why we want accredited people. We want people that are making $200,000 or they're worth $1 million. Those type of people are not going to have an emergency and not be able to cover it. If they have an emergency, they have an emergency fund. Most of those people have group insurance, and they have other investments. In other words, they may have a ranch. They may have rent houses. You know, they may have a lot of different things. So they're diversified in everything they have. You take a person that is not accredited, that $100,000 might be the only money they have. They cannot invest with us if it's the only money you have. You cannot do that.
And that really is set up really to, I guess, protect the investor, because if you're down to your last $50,000, this is not like playing the lottery or going to Vegas. Hey, let me put it down on this and hopefully, you know, I'll get rich overnight. That's not how this works at all. This is a long-term plan that rolls over into one investment, which rolls over into another and rolls over into another. It's once you get the ball rolling, it almost takes care of itself, kind of like a snowball going down a hill.
That's exactly right. So once you get your initial investment, then we roll it over and over to get your interest. And the reason it's so much different than a stock portfolio, you know, they have to jump up at night at midnight and check. If I made money today, did I lose some? Where am I at? And it makes people gray-headed, you know, to go through all this.
Yeah.
But with ours, you know where your money is. You know it's in a policy. You know that it's in a life insurance policy that is secure. You know, it's not going to lose money that day. You know, the principal is right there in that life insurance policy. So I like that better myself, as knowing that it can't go down that day, that you can't look at it at the end of the day and say, well, you know, it lost $25,000 or something. So a life insurance policy, everybody's got one. They understand the concept, and then they have to also understand that when we buy this policy from these people, you know, they're the one that's going to make the profit on it. And we're going to make a profit from what we buy it for and what the face amount of the policy is. That's how they make their interest.
And so
and a lot of people have been with us a lot of years doing this.
Yeah, and that's really the whole concept is this. It takes several years. So somebody who is in their 50s or even, say, early 60s, it's okay because you have to just get that ball rolling. But it, you know, what do you usually say? It takes, and I'm probably
doing this
wrong.
Yeah, it's going to take 7 or 8 years.
7 or 8 years to double your money.
Yes, you can't do it overnight. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It just doesn't work that way,
yeah.
You know?
If you're looking for a get-rich scheme, go to Vegas. But for,
for, and come home in a bus.
Yeah, come home in a bus. or somebody else's bus.
Oh my God!
So I mean, this is a planning process, and it's. it's one of these types of investments that, like you said, people know exactly what they're getting into. They know all the risks, and they also know, I mean, because it's a well-informed type of investment. So when you're investing in Wall Street, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know the state of whatever, you know, stocks you're investing in. It's as willy-nilly almost as the wind. But with a life settlement investment, you literally know everything. You know everything about the policyholder. You know what they've been diagnosed with. You know the type of cancer. You know the treatments that they've done. What other kinds of things do people know when they look at the policy?
Well, when they look at it, you know, they know that it's either 24 months, 17 months, 12 months, 30 months. They know everything about this person. We send them page 14. You know, we tell them, here is the life expectancy. Read it. We tell them what kind of cancer they've got. We tell them how many months the doctors think they'll live. Now, sometimes doctors are wrong. If your people will go and look at our website for this year, all these policies but two came in early. Now, two were late, but the rest of them came in early. The doctors were wrong. They didn't know how fast that cancer, you know, was going to do them in. You know, they thought, well, they've got 24 or 30 months. We've had several 30-month ones. Really, 27 to 30 is my favorite because they seem to come in early. The doctor says, oh, John here is going to live 30 months with pancreatic cancer. That isn't going to ever happen.
Oh, wow.
You know, or breast cancer. Breast cancer is one of the really bad ones. And they may say, well, this woman is going to live 30 months. Well, if this is a second go-around, she is not going to live 30 months, you know.
And you've looked at enough of these policies over the years that you can kind of, you see these things, because when you get the life expectancy from the doctors, yes, they're trained professionals, they're in the medical field, they've gone to medical school, but seeing the patterns and seeing the trends over the years, you know to look for these things, and when they say something like this person will go this long or whatever, you can go through it, see every little thing, and then you might see something in there that may spark in the back of your brain, and they may not be able to say this officially, but you know, oh my gosh, they went to the Netherlands to try the spring water diet, and so all that's going to do is just make this worse. Now the doctors may not specifically address something like that, but that fact is in there, and you can spot those things.
Well, and what I do is I go over and over and over, and I go, okay, how much treatment did they have the first time if it's breast cancer? What all happened? Okay, they did the left breast, but now it's in all these lymph nodes. When it's already, you know, 10 lymph nodes, the chances of survival is just not going to happen. And then you look and see, where all else is it? They said, well, it's in the ribs, it's in the backbone, and you're going, no, no, they're not going to live that long. And it depends if it's metastasized in other places. If it's already in some other places, I don't think they'll make it 30 months, and I'm going to buy that policy. And I've called it right on several of the long-term ones that they died in 12 months. And especially breast cancer is, you know, they've done the weird treatments, that's out. They want to go back to Mexico for more. And the doctors lots of times will say, I will no longer handle your case if you're going to do these weird treatments. We've had several of them just said, no, we're out. We're not going to help you. And because they know that normal treatment is the best thing, you know. If you have breast cancer, you need to be on it. You need to be doing everything you can to try to save your life, you know. But a lot of people don't. You know, they do all these other things thinking that that's going to speed it, their recovery up, and it's not. If they're obese, that's a real bad thing. If you're obese, your chances of survival is, you know, really bad. And then, as I said, the alternate treatment. And the other thing, lots of times, is we look to see if they say, I want to stop all treatment.
And wow, that's a dangerous one.
Yeah, and we have a lot of them that just says, I cannot do it anymore. I just, you know, it's just too much. My body can't take it. So, you know, you just never know. So we try to look at everything. You know, where they've been doing treatment, what kind of treatment have they had. And then, you know, the different kinds of cancer is real important. And if it hasn't metastasized, yes, they may make it, you know, 2 years, 3 years. But if it's gone to some other places, I do not think they will.
Yeah, so this is a very well-informed investment, as well as anything I can ever think of. I can't think of anything where you actually know, you know, here's the past, here's the present, here's probably what's going to happen in the future. You have this long-term, wide-angled vision of what's really going on with the policyholder. So when you look at these to bid on, you're not just kind of, you know, closing your eyes and flipping a coin and taking somebody's word for it. You actually study these things and you know, hey, if this isn't good, I'm not even going to bid on it. And there's a number that you just passed on.
We turned down so many this last month. They just weren't sick.
Yeah.
You know, they send us this deal and I go, John is not sick enough. I do not think that he's terminal. I believe that he might survive.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to do that. And if they're not terminal, we don't do it. Our clients want to make a profit, and that's why they're buying the policies. Is, you know, they're dealing with people who are terminal, and if they're not, we're not going to buy the policy.
No.
Also, if it's $1 million or more, we require two opinions. We won't do it on one opinion. We want two doctors' opinions from separate hospitals. And so I think that's a good thing, getting two opinions.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because if you take one, I mean, yeah, have you ever seen a case where you took one and it was like, okay, this is fine, and then you get a second opinion and it didn't match?
Oh, we've had that happen a lot of times.
What do you do then?
You reject it and you don't buy it.
So there's just, if it's not consistent, then you just throw it out altogether.
You have to. In other words, if one says 24 months, one says 30, that's real close. And, you know, you're okay. But if one comes in at 30 and one says 48 months, there's something wrong.
Mm.
Something bad wrong. This person is not sick like the first guy thinks. So we do not buy it. And it's got to be close. They both got to have similar opinions of what the cancer is and the treatments and where they're at. So if it's less than $1 million, we will do it with one opinion, but we're not going to with $1 million or more.
Because there's just too much at stake at that point.
That's exactly right. This is a lot of money. We're now getting up into the millions, so we have to have two opinions.
Okay, excellent. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And we should point out that that's your office number, so don't call that number right now with questions because there's nobody actually over in your office.
Not on Saturday morning.
Not on Saturday morning. But you can call next week and go and make an appointment, go to, and sit down and talk all day long. So write that number down. Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we start getting into trivia, and you always bring interesting things to the table. So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about Texas wineries.
Ah.
One of the most interesting things about Texas.
Yes.
Did you know we have 36 wineries in the state of Texas?
Really?
Yes. Do you know how we started out?
No.
Well, the San Franciscan monks came to El Paso in the 1600s, and they needed wine for their sacraments. So they brought some vines with them, and, you know, they planted them out in West Texas, you know, and you know how dry it is in West Texas. Well, the vines did good. The wine came along, and that started it. But Val Verde Wineries is the oldest actual winery, not just a group of monks, in Del Rio, Texas. Has the oldest winery in the state, and it's called Val Verde. And people don't realize, really, the most successful ones are in West Texas.
Really?
Oh my gosh! We altogether, Texas has 3,200 acres of winery.
Wow.
Of vines, you know. And we started 100 years before California.
Really?
People don't even know that, yeah.
See,
100 years.
I know that, you know, you look at the wineries in California, you look at the wineries, you know, over in Italy and Europe, and you think, okay, well, they have a very different climate than here. And so I would not have guessed that the climate was actually good for growing wine supplies and stuff.
Okay. In Texas, the land is so different. The climate is so different. We're divided really into three main wine-growing regions, okay? The diversity is just amazing. Now, North Central, that's where we're in, that's the northern third of the state. It goes from New Mexico, it goes across the Texas Panhandle, and all the way toward Dallas. And we have some of the biggest grapes and wineries out here in West Texas.
Wow.
I didn't
know that.
And, the High Plains, it has the highest concentration of grape growers in the entire state. And then you've got the southeastern region, and that's Austin, San Antonio, and Houston. And it's been hard hit several years ago by Pierce disease, and it hadn't really recovered yet. And then the other one, you've got the Muscadine family, and in the center is the Texas Hill Country. Now, it's the one, the high-class ones, what I call it, because they have all these tiers. And you can go down there, they'll put you in a Lincoln limousine or a Cadillac limousine. They'll take you to, like, 15 different wineries.
Oh, now that's cool.
Oh, yeah, for wine tasting. Then they'll take you to dinner, maybe barbecue, whatever, there in the Hill Country. But you can take a group of people, four, five, six people, eight, get a limousine. They've got so many tours. It's an amazing deal to see all those and all the wine tasting. And then you've got the Mexico border, you know, El Paso, and they call it the Trans-Pecos region, and that's got the others. And all of them are just completely different. Dallas is a lot different than, you know, than here it is in the High Plains. But the High Plains, of course, has got some of the best grapes and wineries, and it's called Escondido, and that is a big deal. You've got the Davis Mountains, you've got the Texoma area, and every one of this land is just completely different. And one of the ones in Johnson City, started in 1845, has been in business all the way through to right now.
1845?
Yes.
Wow.
1845, and it's near Johnson City, and it's been in continuous operation all this time.
Wow.
And they say, you know, of course, compared to the French, we don't have very many acres. But 3,200 acres is a lot of grapes growing, let me tell you.
That is, and considering the grapes are very small, they can cram
That's
a lot
exactly
in there.
Right. It takes a lot of grapes to make wine.
Yeah.
And someone was giving a review of all these wineries down in the Hill Country, and they said, well, we were tasting all the different wines, but I didn't like that one. And they said, you're not supposed to like every wine you take.
Well, they're all from different regions, and the climates are so different, and the ground is so different, and the grapes are so different. I would imagine they all have a very, very different flavor.
Yes. And, of course, in 2005, they started planting more. So it's, you know, we've got large increases in the plantings through 2010. And they just have so many different kinds, and it's just amazing to me that California, New York, Washington, they're way behind us.
Wow.
And the University of Texas is the largest wine producer in the state. The university has 1,000 acres themselves.
Are you serious?
Yeah. They are the biggest one in the state. Can you believe that? there's 400 acres planted near Fort Stockton, and they have a big one. And they did an experiment, 1987. And then the university leases land to a group of Bordeaux winemakers who produce two or three labels off of it. But the second largest is Llano Escondido up here in the Panhandle. But I thought that's so interesting. We have 36 wineries in the state. We've got over 3,000 acres. And who would think Texas was a wine-growing state?
I would have never guessed. Never guessed.
And, of course, all these tastings brings tourists, a lot of tourist trade to all the different ones. The Hill Country has probably got the most tourists who go and do wine tastings and use the limousines. They've got so many tours, so many limousines. It's really a fun, fun deal to go to.
Now, I know it's much more lush over in East Texas, so that doesn't surprise me quite as much. I guess it surprises me a little bit, but not as much as, you know, the further west you start going, that there are still wineries, you know, out this way. It's surprising to me.
Yes, if you go out to Lubbock, you know, that is the second largest one, and it's been there a long time, and the land is completely different. You know, it's that dry West Texas land that makes the grapes so great out there.
Yeah.
And everybody else has a different type of land. They grow a different type of grape. It's just an amazing thing, and it's millions and millions of wine that's being sold from these wineries.
That's amazing.
They're shipping it out of state.
Is all this well known?
Well, I mean, I've known about it a long time, but I don't know if people in Texas really know about all these wineries and what they're really doing and how great the wine is.
Because I've never really heard anybody talk about it. I've never, you know, heard people say, wow, Texas is known for wine, and we have 36 wineries, and I've never heard that come up in conversation anywhere. I feel like I'm kind of behind the times.
Yes, and I wondered if you knew about it since you weren't from here.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you there's a lot of people in Texas that don't even know that we grow all these grapes and have all these vineyards right here in the state.
Fascinating. I bet you're right.
Yeah. And so I thought that'd be good for you. That's another place you should go, is visit some of these wineries, do the wine tasting. It's good for your heart. It's good for your heart.
There you go. You found some health benefits.
There's health benefit in wine. Well, you know what they tell old people? A glass of wine every day keeps their heart going. You can always use that excuse.
Wow. Only Faye Bagby could take a wine tour and turn it into a healthy regimen.
That's it. Oh, man.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, we're going to have to definitely get some friends together and go on the tour and see some of these places. This is great.
Yes,
I didn't know that.
I think you'll love it. Yes. And the Hill Country has got so many different ones that you can visit. You know, as I told you, the one in Johnson City has been there since 1845.
That's amazing.
Yes. Now, the one, Val Verde, you know how dry the land is in Del Rio. Del Rio is a poor, poor place.
Yeah.
You know? They have no money out there. And yet they've got this old, old winery that you can go and go through and see how long it's been there.
Wow.
Yes. And as I said, the San Francisco monks came to El Paso and had to plant some grapes. They didn't have anything for their sacraments.
Wow.
So that's how it all got started. And everybody thinks California, you know, because of the land grants, the Spanish land grants, all this, that they started everything. But they didn't start wine.
So it started by the monks out of necessity.
Out of necessity. They brought the little seedlings along because they needed sacrament, and they couldn't do it unless they grew their own grapes.
Wow.
So in the 1600s, they were in El Paso, and they started growing them for the sacraments.
Wow.
San Francisco monks.
Definitely. Wine tours going on the list now.
I thought you'd want to do this.
Yeah, I love me a good glass of wine.
Well, you love all the ones, and each different region, if you go and taste it, it's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
It'll be a completely different kind of grape with a different taste.
Yeah. I mean, you go to Northern California, and yeah, there's a little variety, but I mean, it's basically all exactly the same. You go to, you know, like the south of France, and it's all grown in that one climate. And so, you know, being here in Texas with so many different different climates that we have, and so much variety with the land and the soil, and you know, the amount of rain and all that, you know, all the factors that go into it. It's fascinating about how you know, these things affect the taste of it. And yeah, I got to do this.
Yeah, different dirt does. And remember, even the University of Texas got 1,000 acres.
That's funny to me. It shouldn't be, but it's funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, here at the university, you know, they were experimenting, and they have 1,000 acres.
Yeah.
It tells you something about the grapes in Texas, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Or the education process.
That's right, educating people. And experimenting, and I imagine there's a lot of experimenting going on.
Oh, yeah.
But the different dirt has caused all these different grapes to taste different. The wine is different, and they produce a lot of different kinds.
All from right here in Texas.
Right here in Texas.
There you go.
Grown for Texas.
Brilliant. Nice. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, a wine tour might be nice for somebody who is, retiring, you know, because people put together their bucket list, and that might be one of the things. What other things do people do when they come to talk to you that they're looking forward to when they retire?
Well, they all want to travel. They want to do things with their grandchildren. And they want to go somewhere they've never been. Travel lust takes over. You know, they may buy an RV that costs $200,000, put all the grandkids in it, tour the country. They may want to go and see the foliage in New Hampshire. You know, they may want to go to Nova Scotia, or they may say, I want to go to Europe, or I want to go to Holland. You know, and see all the beautiful things, like in the different countries. A lot of people do go to Europe. They go to Italy. I know people that have gone to Italy and stayed a month.
Oh, wow.
That's an amazing thing. If you've got the money, you can go and stay a month and tour Italy. It's a great thing.
And you don't have to worry about it.
No.
Because while people are touring Italy or doing whatever they're doing, they know back home their money is still growing.
That's right. Now, one thing that every retired person does, it just tickles me to death, they all have to have a cruise.
Oh,
they all go on a cruise. They're going to fly to Florida. They're going to get on a ship. They're going to cruise. Now, some people, it's a one-time deal. They do it. They're through. They go into something else. I have a lot of clients, every year they take a cruise somewhere.
Oh, really? Every year?
Yes. Now, if it was me, I would take the river cruises. You can do that in Europe. You can go down the Rhine. You can take all these wonderful river cruises. You see all the cities. You see the ones that have got the old churches. There's some churches over there in Europe that are the most magnificent things in the world.
Oh, yeah. Italy, Amsterdam, there.
All of them do. Now then, there's river cruises in the United States also. And those are wonderful. And to me, that's what I do. I just take a river cruise here in the United States.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of like Huck Finn. You know, go down the Mississippi, go down all that.
Kind of like Huck Finn.
Like Huck Finn.
Never heard anybody associate Huck Finn with a river cruise, but sure,
well,
whatever works.
that would work for me.
So. Maybe a raft, but not necessarily a river cruise.
Oh, my gosh. Well, because, see... people forgot about Hannibal, Mississippi. They forgot about all those bluffs, those places. And remember, all those people like Lafitte, they were cruising down through there. They were stealing and doing all that, but it takes you back hundreds of years.
Yeah.
You know? And you can cruise slowly through all that and imagine what all you missed way back.
Oh, yeah.
So, see, I have a vivid imagination.
Yeah, clearly. you turned wine into a health thing. So, yeah, your imagination is vivid.
That's right. If I can do that, you can imagine how my imagination runs.
So there's lots of things that people want to do on retirement. The thing is, though, you have to start the planning process, because the last thing you want to do is retire and then have to worry about, oh my gosh, how long can I go? Am I gonna make it long enough to retire the whole time, or is my money gonna run out and I've got to go back to work?
That's right. And if you had some serious illnesses or anything, it could derail your retirement.
And there's other things. There's illnesses.
So that's right. Anything could happen. Have to help the grandchildren.
Yeah.
I'm always telling people, don't go too far with helping the grandchildren. You know, they're younger than you. They can work. But we're all softies for them. Let's just face it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they'll help them. And I don't want them to get in trouble financially because they gave too much away.
Yeah. Emergencies can pop up.
And that's right. So always be prepared. And if you start the program and, you know, you've got that interest coming in all the time, and people say to me, Faye, I need $60,000 a year, okay? We're going to put that aside. We're going to put that aside for knowing how much they're going to take out every year. Now, sometimes that first year people say, oh, I need $90,000. Well, sometimes that'll work. But I don't want them to get too far ahead the first 3 or 4 years, okay?
Is there a difference, and I don't know if there is or not, I'm just kind of throwing this out there, but is there a difference in the planning process pre-retirement as opposed to post-retirement? Because I know people get ready, you know, they have that security of the job, they know that there's money coming in and there's things happening, they have that, I guess, the security blanket of their regular day-to-day paycheck. But then, once they get to retirement and they take that steady paycheck away, and now they're relying solely on what they've already got, what they've already, the wealth that they've already built, what's in the bank, and the money that they're growing, is there a difference between their mindset or how they approach the whole process as opposed, you know, pre-retirement as opposed to post?
Well, if it's pre-retirement, and maybe they've only put $300,000 or $500,000 with me, we know that when they retire, you know, they're going to put another $500,000, which gives them a great portfolio. And we've had a lot of people that, let's say they came, they gave us $500,000. We started that, got those policies, and then they said, Faye, we've decided to retire. Well, we weren't expecting it. I thought they were going another year or 2 years. So then we know we've got to ratchet up, get this other money going for them also. So it depends which way they're thinking, you know. And they may have more than that. They may have $2 million they're putting with us. And we just don't know till we get started how much the final number is going to be.
And so really the bottom line is every investment trajectory, every plan that you put people on is customized for each person. Where are they starting? Where do they want to be? And how long do they want to until they want to get there?
That's exactly right. This is not a deal. It's not a cookie cutter deal where you just say, oh, we'll just put them all in this. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Because everybody's a different age. They have a different amount of money. Their estate is a different amount. And so you have to worry about all this. You have to say, okay, here's what we need to do to help.
Mm-hmm. So for somebody who maybe a life settlement is not for them, maybe they're not accredited, maybe they're just not comfortable with it, maybe they don't have enough to get in yet, or whatever the situation may be, if investing in a life insurance policy isn't going to fit for them, there are other options.
Because, that's right. They can do annuities.
Yeah.
And annuities are great. They're guaranteed. You can take an annuity. You will not ever run out of retirement money. You can't outlive your money with an annuity. Once you retire, you can take money every month for the rest of your life. And annuities are solid. There's not any doubt about it. And a good annuity is great. I would buy a fixed annuity. Do not buy, in my opinion, a variable annuity. A variable annuity has stocks in it and mutual funds. So it can go down. It's not guaranteed like a fixed annuity is. A fixed annuity is guaranteed, okay? Your principal can never go down. It's not like a variable. Your principal can go down because it's got mutual funds in it. But a fixed annuity does not have any mutual funds in it, so it will never go down. And you can have a lifetime income. I've got a lot of people, and they have money, but they chose a fixed annuity because they didn't want anything that they didn't understand. And they understood the annuities, and that's what they bought. And I've got a lot of people that have annuities. Now then, people can have annuities, and they can have a life settlement also.
So,
now, I've got some women, they chose annuities. Their husbands chose life settlements.
So just because somebody can do a life settlement doesn't mean that they will or should or must. It's whatever they're comfortable with.
It's whatever is comfortable when I explain it and you understand it. It's which way you want to go. I had some people come in not long ago. The wife was thinking annuities, and the husband listened. She listened, and she said, I think I'll go with life settlements right now. And they have more money. They will be putting, you know, other monies with us, and she may still do an annuity. But for right now, they had $600,000 that they wanted to put in, and we put that in, and that's growing now.
Mm.
And they're not retired yet. So, you know, they will be making more money. They'll be putting more money in. And this year we've had a lot of people that they had other monies they brought to us from other places. Remember, a lot of these people have worked for three companies. If you've worked for three or four companies over the last 25 years, they've got some old investments sitting somewhere. They've got some old 401ks that they have forgotten about that they need to get moved over to us. So if you've got some old 401ks, you don't even know what they've done the last 10 years, you need to check on them and get them moved over.
Either
way, a lot of people forget about it.
Whichever way people, whichever route they take, it's a planning process. It's part of a long-term strategy. And really, the bottom line for anybody who wants to retire, I mean, if you want to work until the day you fall over, that's fine.
But we don't want to do that, do we?
We don't want to do that. Most people don't want to do that, but maybe some do. I don't know. Many people retire and just go volunteer someplace, or maybe they go and work part-time someplace, or maybe they get a ranch to keep busy. So it's kind of like going to work, but not the pressure and responsibility. Regardless of the route that people take, they have to get started because it's going to take some time, but the faster you get started, the better off you'll be. If you're not investing, if you're not growing your money, then you're losing money.
I'm going to tell you, it's kind of like my grandson, the little 2.5-year-old, says, you're backing up.
Yeah, exactly. You're backing up.
And you're backing up. So instead of backing up, let's go forward and let's make your money work for you. And if your money isn't working for you, you're not going to come out in a good way at the end of a retirement deal.
Exactly.
So you have to use your head.
For people who are ready to go, or they just want to come get some information next week, you've got some availabilities open, right?
That's exactly right. I will be here. I will be here with bells on. And I expect people to come and talk to me.
All
okay?
Right. So to make that appointment one last time, Faye, what's your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. And come see us. Quit procrastinating. We forgot to talk about procrastination this morning.
Yes, we procrastinated. We put it off till next week.
That's right. And they do. These people, they'll procrastinate for 6 months sometimes.
Yeah. All right, Faye. Thank you so much. Go out there and make some money.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.